Hi everyone, and welcome to minute 85 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Film Cast, I think, or am I forgetting that? No, I think it's the Forgotten Film Cast, yeah. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thank you. Our objective is to finish the week.
Should you choose to accept it. Yeah. Oh, that's a different series. Right. So, minute 85 begins with Miller starting to take off his gear. And ends with Miller deciding that he's not taking no for an answer.
Yep.
So, basically, we ended yesterday with the men finding out that there's this radar station nearby, and Miller's getting ready for something, and Riven is telling everybody, let's maybe we should just avoid going to that place, possibly. And this minute begins as he continues to talk, and he goes, so Captain, what I'm trying to say is, why don't we just go around this thing? And Miller, who's taking off all his equipment at this point, looks at him and goes, I hear what you're saying, but we can't go around it. Which, again, I like that he's forcefully doing this. But what's very funny is as he's talking, I don't know if you noticed this, but you know he's having trouble opening his jacket because his hands are shaking too much.
Right.
You know, which shows a lot more realism of what's going on with this character. You know, like when he's in the throes of battle, he's okay, but when he's not, he's just shaking. You know, we've obviously touched upon this many times over the course of this entire series so far, but he's probably suffering from some sort of PTSD. Which obviously is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Not something that you really want to be dealing with. But, you know, they do it in a relatively subtle way where we see his hand shaking. But, you know, they don't go too much into it beyond
that. Yeah. Well, and it's, I thought, like you're saying, it's a nice touch that they add that in there. I've known some folks that have struggled with, you know, various neurological disorders, Parkinson's and whatnot, and you know that shaking can be a symptom of that, and just you know the way that they would struggle with certain you know seemingly normal activities when that type of thing is going on. It was a nice added touch there that he was struggling with that.
Yeah, I too am familiar with people who have similar things like that. And here he's just adding it. Because again, this isn't necessarily a neurological issue. It's more of a psychological issue.
Right, yeah, right.
There's something we can see from the whole thing, obviously. We'll never really know. Because, you know, since you spoiled things earlier this week by telling us he doesn't make it out of the movie, no one's going to be able to figure that one out. You know, to figure that one out. So, I guess, you know, who knows? And at this point, Jackson looks on and he goes, I'm with Ryben on this one, sir. And, you know, he looks around and, you know, he goes, well, we left them 88s. And it's pretty funny that they say that because this must be from a scene that was cut because there was no place where they left the 88s. So I'm not really sure what they're referring to. But Miller responds, yeah, for the Air Force. The Air Force isn't going to spend ordnance on one machine gun. And at this point, Melish decides that he's going to join in on the rebellion. And he says, Captain, we can still skip it and accomplish our mission. I mean, this isn't our mission, right, sir? And you know, Miller, you could see on his face that, you know, he's someone who's looking at the big picture, not the small picture. When, you know, the rest of these guys are looking at the here and now, he's, you know, Miller has already shown us earlier this week, even, you know, that he's privy to some knowledge of what's possibly, you know, what the big wigs are interested in doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Goals and stuff like that. And he looks, he's not looking at things from a micro perspective. He's looking at more as a macro perspective. He's looking at the overall picture, and he knows something that these men aren't able to I guess comprehend even, because for them, okay, you give us a mission, we go and do it. You know, we don't know how it doesn't matter to us how all these missions are connected and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Miller is looking at the large puzzle of everything and saying, okay, how do these pieces all fit together, and what do I need to do and stuff like that. And you know, I think that's great the way that they show that.
I also think it's great, kind of the frustration that you see on Tom Hanks's face as he's going through this, you know, as everyone's kind of, I guess you could say, almost ganging up against him. And you kind of get the impression like he kind of, you know, sees what they're all saying and that he almost maybe even agrees with them, but knows that that's not what he should do. You know, he realizes what the easier course would be, but also knows what his duty should be, and is kind of, you know, he doesn't come out and say, yeah, I agree with you, but kind of in your face, you can almost see him say, I agree with you, but we have to do this. And his ultimate line there, where, you know, he says that our objective is to win the war. I mean, that's such a great moment. I would almost say that's my favorite line of the movie. It's just so impactful the way he delivers it here.
Yeah. And you can see on his face also the idea it goes back to the conversation that these characters had a long time ago, probably 45 minutes ago or something like that, where the idea of griping, you know, where Miller mm-hmm. says, okay, you know, there are things that you can gripe to me, but I'm not going to be griping to you. And you know, I think that fits in here also, that here they're complaining to him, but he's not going to give in to that. You know, he's still the commander. He's still the one that they're supposed to look up to with everything that they're doing and everything that's going on. And for him to agree with them will be, you know, a way to show that, wait a second, you know, I'm the one in charge here, and I'm the one making decisions. You know,
right.
I'm the one who knows, you know, what our objective is. And as you said, the line that we're about to say, you know, because first before that, he says, okay, this is our mission. And he goes, oh, well, that's what you want to do. You just want to leave it here so they can ambush, you know, the next company that comes along. And he goes, no, sir, that's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying it seems like an unnecessary risk given our objective, sir. And then he gives the line that you mentioned, and he says, our objective is to win the war, sir. I don't have a good feeling about this one.
Yeah, the next line is great too.
When was the last time you felt good about anything? And I like that phrase also. You know, the idea is that, okay, you're in the middle of war, you're following orders, you do what you have to do.
Yeah,
you know, that's what comes down to. I mean, a little later in the movie, he will explain further what that really means, but. You know, the idea that, okay, you have to, you know, we're not here to feel good. We're here to reach our objective, which is to win the war. That's our objective. That's the way the objective should be. And, you know, here I'm the one in charge, and I'm the one making the decision, making sure that we follow through on all of our objectives. You know, if our objective is to save Private James Francis Ryan instead of James Frederick Ryan, or our objective is to you know, take the beach on Omaha Beach or whatever it could be, that I'm here to follow those orders and make sure that my men follow my orders with that also, which is great because he's, you know, Tom Hanks. It's very funny when you look at his career. I mean, yesterday we talked a little bit about some of his earlier movies and stuff like that. I wonder if anyone, you know, would look at a movie like Splash or even a movie like Big or A Bachelor Party and say, this is going to be, you know, this is the actor that everyone is going to emulate a decade from now.
Right.
That everyone, yeah, says, I want to be like Tom Hanks. I want to be able to play all these type of roles. You know, he just seems like a goofy kid. You know, that's what, or a goofy, he wasn't even a kid anymore, but a goofy guy. You're like I am. You're also an '80s kid. You know, the idea of bosom buddies, and the man with the one red shoe, and you even go to Turner and Hooch. You have all these different movies where Dragnet, Tom Hanks,
absolutely, yeah,
where Tom Hanks is not playing a serious character, and to think that just a decade later he's going to completely switch. You know, I would probably say that Philadelphia is pretty much the turning point in '93.
Yeah. You know,
even,
yeah,
maybe League of Their Own is sort of on the cusp for that because he's, you know, he plays both comedy and drama there. You know, with the way that he, you know, the scene where the, you know, in the League of Their Own where the guy comes with the telegram.
Oh yeah.
You know, just the way that he takes control of that scene is just amazing. You know, again, it shows that his transformation over the course of all those years. But again, if you were to take somebody who doesn't know anything about movies and show them some of those movies from the 80s and say, do you think this is going to be an actor that everyone is going to say is one of the best actors ever? You know, you're saying, come on, what are you talking about?
Well, and you think about some of the types of roles that he plays nowadays. I mean, you know, again, thinking about those early things, Bachelor Party, Splash, things like that. I mean, you know, would you imagine that this is the guy that they would have play Walt Disney one day, that they would have play Mr. Rogers one day? You know, anytime you need like a American hero, you know, showed up on screen, you know, whether you're talking about Sully or Captain Phillips or whatever, you know, these kind of lofty, you know, iconic type of character type of things. You know, a character is maybe even the wrong term to use, because like when you think about a Walt Disney or a Fred Rogers, I mean, these are American institutions. I mean, would you have thought the guy from Bachelor Party was going to play Uncle Walt one day? You know,
that's right. That's the idea that you just look at the way that he has completely transformed our belief of him. You know, because now you look back and you say, okay, he was a great actor even in the 80s with what he was doing. You know, and people noticed it at Big because they were able to give him, you know, they gave him, an Oscar nomination. He got a lot of awards for it and stuff like that. The idea of someone being able to basically play a kid, that's more or less what he had to do there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's the opposite of what people look at. You know, when you look at him as a dramatic actor, you don't think of Big.
Right. But when we were talking about the top performances for him, though, a few days ago, I mean, if you remember the movies that I mentioned there, a lot of the ones that I go to when I think of Tom Hanks, first and foremost, are some of those earlier roles that are, you know, maybe a little bit goofier, but they've got, you know, a lot of heart to them. You know, a role like in Splash or in Big, you know, there is a silliness to those parts, but there's a lot of heart to those parts. And, you know, you summed it up very well there. You're talking about A League of Their Own. I think that's part of why when we were listing top performances for Tom Hanks, I put A League of Their Own at the top, because I think there's a lot of very funny moments there. He's tapping into that comedic ability that he does so well, but there are also some great moments there. Like I said, that scene with the telegram is one of my favorites. I thought of that scene watching early parts of Saving Private Ryan with the telegram type of moments there. There's some great moments in A League of Their Own where you see him, struggling with being, this washed up baseball player and the alcoholism and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of depth and a lot of range to what he brings to that role. Even as we've moved on here and he's focused maybe more on more dramatic stuff, he still kind of gets out that comedic itch every now and then. I think maybe you see it more like when he shows up on Saturday Night Live and things like that, but he still gets opportunities.
True. It's very true. I like the way that they present this here. We see the look on his face, and it's just great. The way that he's looking at them like, I'm the one giving orders here. You do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do is I want to feel good. I want to feel that I'm doing something that's right.
Well, while we're kind of on this subject, though, of performances, and, just given the fact that I think maybe we have a little time to play with here because, there's not a ton of meat in this minute. We've pretty much gone through what we have to deal with here. As great as the performance of Tom Hanks was in this movie, it deserves all the recognition that it got. Someone that in these 5 minutes that I've been able to be with you here for. Really didn't have much for who I really thought was my MVP of this movie. And since this was my first time seeing the movie, I want to call it out. I love Tom Sizemore in this movie. I think this is maybe his best performance. He's just so great as kind of the dependable, reliable second guy that every great leader needs in a movie like this. And in these 5 minutes, wasn't really much in the way of standout things for us to talk about with Tom Sizemore, but since I've got a chance, I want to say he was my favorite in this.
Interesting. Okay, so you were more upset that he didn't make it than Miller not making it.
Well, yeah, probably. But at the same time, going through this film, if I had to predict someone that wasn't going to, it was him. Because I don't know, that almost seems like a duty of the second person. You know what I mean?
Okay, I can sort of understand that. I mean, having been in the Army and, seeing a lot of movies about Army, the Army and stuff like that, most people will agree that they've had some sort of commander like Tom Sizemore's character.
Mm.
Just the way most people wish they had commanders like Miller, but the idea that you have this guy who's gonna do all that he can to help you and help make you a better soldier with uh-huh. everything that you do. That's what Mike is doing here, and I love later on, we'll talk about this a few months from now, some of the way that he fights, where he just like, there's a point where he runs out of bullets and just takes his helmet and throws his helmet at the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I love him in this movie also. I think he does a great job here. He was a much better actor than most of his filmography will tell you,
mm-hmm.
because he played so many crappy roles. but he's great here. He's great in Enemy of the State. He's great in Striking Distance. I loved him in Black Hawk Down. Have you ever seen Black Hawk Down?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's great there also. He has these roles that stood out. No question about that. And I love the trivia about him in this movie that he was having his usual drug problems around this time, and Spielberg said to him, "Look, if I catch you once, doing drugs, you're off this movie, and we're gonna reshoot every one of your scenes so that no one will ever remember that you're part of this movie.
Oh, gee.
And he lived up to it.
Yeah, you know, pulled it off.
That's right.
Yeah, too bad we lost him, early. Yeah. Just a couple of years ago at this point, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was two or three years ago. That
2023. Yeah, it's not even 2 years yet.
Yeah, very soon. But we have these movies to look back and view him on. You know,
absolutely.
Exactly. All right. Anything else you want to say about the movie in general?
Well, I mean, I think I pretty much shared it on the first day, because like we said, this was my first time watching it. And it's a great movie. It's one I'll need to revisit again for sure. Saying that again, one of the things that put me off for so long was just wanting to be in the right frame of mind, knowing how intense and such it was. But it's definitely a movie that deserves rewatches. So I appreciate you finally, giving me the reason that I had to sit down and finally say, yep, I'm going to watch this. So.
I appreciate that. Now, would you recommend it to family and friends to watch it with you?
I would. I mean, I think depending on, which family member they were, I would probably be like, all right, now just be aware it's going to get pretty intense. I mean, like I think, my son would have no problem. My son would be like, oh yeah, no big deal. My daughter would probably, not be as quick to jump on this one, but she would, at the same time, she would have an appreciation for the history. She's a little bit of a history buff. I mean, it's, I think for different people, this is a movie that, you've got to, you got to kind of know yourself and how you want to approach it, because it's not an easy watch at times, for sure.
Would your wife watch it with you?
Yeah, I think she would.
Okay. See, now you got a date movie night when you don't have to go out and get a babysitter anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg-directed movies. So, Todd, once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. Well, my top Spielbergs are definitely more slanted towards the earlier part of his career when I grew up. Not for all of them, but at number five, I put Catch Me If You Can. Number four, Jurassic Park. Number three, Jaws. Number two, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And number one, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I think Jay's going to be upset at you that Jurassic Park is so far down on the list. But,
I know, and Richard won't like that I put Jaws at number three either, but, can't please everybody.
I know. No. You can try.
Oh, I learned long ago. That's a futile effort.
That's one of the things we learn when we get married.
Yeah.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. Once again, we didn't mention this, but happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there.
Yes. Happy Valentine's Day.
This is the perfect movie to take your to go watch. But if for some reason you want something a little lighter, so jump back to season four. You can rewatch When Harry Met Sally, or you can even jump back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, that love affair between Steve Martin and John Candy.
Maybe just about every other movie you've covered might count as more of a Valentine's Day movie than Saving Private Ryan.
I don't know. You think The Great Escape is more of a Valentine's Day movie?
Sure. There's a lot of bromance going on in that movie.
Listen, The Great Escape doesn't have any female characters, and this movie has like two.
Yeah, there were a couple walking in the background earlier in the week when we were talking with the guy that couldn't hear so well.
Right. Michelson, Mendelssohn, you know.
Yeah. He won't hear us mess up his name, so it's okay.
Goldberg, Iceberg, you know. Yeah. Well, he'll hear us, but we just have to, like, write it down and scream it really loud. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. So, Todd, would you like to, for one final time this season, tell everyone where they can find Todd Liebenow?
Absolutely. So the podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. My blog is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can follow me on X at Forgotten Films. Films is spelled with a Z. And also you can follow me on Letterboxd. I log every movie that I watch there religiously right after I watch it. And if you follow me on Letterboxd, I follow back. So.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on the website, movearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on X/Twitter. And you can also find me now on Letterboxd. It probably won't be completely updated, but you can find me there. I have enough movies there listed, even without... you know, not updating the last 6 months of the 600 movies I've seen. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So, Todd, thank you very much for joining me this week and for taking me up on the challenge and watching the movie.
Absolutely, I
literally take my hat off to you for doing that. For after 27 years, 27 plus years, deciding that you will, you know, take a look at you'll check out this movie, and. A bonus is that you actually enjoyed it a lot.
I did. I enjoyed it a lot. So, yes, thank you very much.
No problem. All right. So, everyone, have a great weekend. Enjoy your Valentine's Day weekend. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, earn this.
My solitude. You